at some point in your life, something happens and you decide something isn't possible or something isn't practical or something isn't responsible. I've got to pay the rent. So when you make those decisions, they become reality.
Right.
Versus decisions. And when you can see something that you've been operating as if it's real as a decision, when you can see the unreality of something, space opens.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike Dizio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike Dizio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest has worked with and impacted over 200,000 people directly in the areas of business and career, relationships and family, communication and self-expression, fulfilling vision, resolving conflict, and overall well-being. She's an author of several books, including Peace Promises, 30 Days to a More Peaceful Life, and The Promise Effect, How to Create a Life That Wasn't Going to Happen Anyway. She's a master coach in the art of being unmessable with, no matter what life throws at you. She spent over 30 years as an entrepreneur, author, coach, course leader, and curriculum designer of transformative programs. Her mission is to empower people to live the life of their dreams now versus someday, and develop themselves to be unmessable with in the process. Personal Development School podcast listeners, I'd like to introduce Jocelyn Herman Saccio. Hello, Jocelyn. How are you?
Hello. I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
For sure. Thank you for being here. So just to start off, I was wondering if you could just spend a few moments letting our audience know who you are, what you do, and maybe just a little bit of your backstory of how you got to where you are today.
Sure. I started participating in transformative programs when I was 11 years old. And that was really because my parents did transformative workshops and it made the difference in their marriage. They were going to get divorced. And then when they participated in this workshop, they ended up staying together and they just celebrated 65 years together. So at 11, they had a young person's program and I did it. And I just got in the world of transformation, which was really a huge gift because when you have the tools and distinctions of transformation, you can create pretty much anything you want. However, you're still human. So you have lids and blind spots. And I was participating in this particular workshop again when I was in my early 20s. And I was already leading seminars and learning how to deliver transformation. But at that time, I had a dream when I was a little kid to be a singer. And I was convinced you couldn't do that. You can't do your art as your career. And in that workshop, that got seen to me as a limiting belief or as a blind spot. And it sort of dissipated and went away. And within 3 months, I got a record deal and ended up having a number one record. So that was a total mind blow of what is possible. And I got committed at that time to making sure other people could live the life of their dreams and fulfill on their vision and be what I call being unmessable with in the process, which literally means being able to create no matter what, not get stuck in reactions or limiting beliefs or thoughts or lids or, you know, just surviving, but staying in that space of magic and creation and fulfillment.
I love that. Wow, what a background. And to be involved in that sort of world that your parents exposed to you at such a young age, that's amazing.
A blessing. All my kids were exposed even younger than me. They were at six, they were doing programs. So
yeah, unbelievable. I always tell people, I remember the bookstore section of personal development and transformation used to be like a couple rows at best.
Yeah.
Now when you go in the store, it's rows upon rows upon rows. So,
yep. It was different in the 70s. I'll tell you, it was like yoga. You were weird if you did yoga. Now you're weird if you don't do yoga. So it's a different kind of time.
That's right. I remember my mom used to like Jack Canfield. I guess he was sort of a big person.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing. So as I mentioned in the intro, your mission is to make a difference with as many people as possible and being able to develop their ability to be unmessable with.
Yes.
In the process of creating the life and dreams that they're living now versus someday. So you touched on it already, but can you go a little more into detail? What do you mean by being unmessable with?
Well, what I don't mean is being tough or being impervious to your feelings or somehow, you know, being able to shut things out. That's not what I mean at all. It really is, no matter what life is throwing at you, circumstances, people that you might not want to interact with, how do you stay grounded in your vision and acting from that space of creation versus reaction? And what I've found in the 30 some odd years that I've been doing this is that most people spend most of their time in reaction, even good reaction. It's not good or bad. It's just they're just on automatic. They're dealing with what's coming at them. They're putting out fires, especially very successful people. And most of my clients, you know, my coaching clients are very successful, but they're really good at reacting. Which is a whole different muscle than creation. And creation is really from nothing. It doesn't require knowing. It requires action. So a lot of the work that I do has people move from that space of analyzing and surviving and dealing with things where you're looking sort of down and managing to shifting to that space of nothing and creation where you're looking up at your vision and saying, okay, now what? Now what am I creating from my vision, not from my thoughts, feelings, reactions, you know, strategies, all of that. We've all had the memories of having the experience of creating. And it's kind of like, you know, when you're little, maybe you're creating a lemonade stand, or you were like, you didn't know really what to do, but you were, you know, making the sign, or maybe your company, or maybe your podcast, or whatever. Mm-hmm. When you're first create, or a relationship, when you're first creating, it's very exciting. It's magical. Even when you're kind of stumbling, you're excited and, you know, thriving and alive. And then at some point, whatever we create turns into something to manage, including our relationships or our companies. Or so that magic that was there in the beginning when we were just creating disappears, and we end up going through life dealing with life.
Right.
And it's not bad. It's just not magic.
Right.
So that's my game, is to get people back into that space of magic, no matter, and they don't have to change careers or change relationships to do it. It really is a muscle that is just atrophied and just needs to be worked out, so to speak.
I love that. That sounds super beneficial and makes a lot of sense. So what have you found in your years of coaching? What's some people's number one reason that they get messed with, that they can't seem to, like, they keep stumbling with? What's one of the biggest stumbling blocks people have that you've seen that you coach?
Definitely limiting beliefs. Things that you think are true that aren't are one of the biggest things that messes with people. I mean, I could give you a list of, I mean, people get messed with by, you know, their view of themselves. You know, people get messed with by things that happened that they haven't forgiven.
Sure.
You know, people get messed with by money, you know, sleep, money, well-being messes with people a lot, because people are not great at keeping their word to themselves. They're okay, maybe, at keeping their word to other people, but mostly our exercise or our health and well-being lives more in a conversation we have with ourselves, unless we have a trainer or a nutritionist or something like that. But, you know, those things kind of fall out very quickly. And when you're not well, when you're not operating with a full tank of gas, you're not going to get to where you're going with ease. You know, you'll end up putt-putting. And that's sort of one of the first things I deal with people, is putting the structures in for that so that they can have a full tank of gas to go wherever they want to go.
Yeah, it's hard to get anywhere with low energy and motivation.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I forgot to eat. Oh, I'm not exercising. Oh, I have no time. It's like, well, you make time, or it's going to make time for you, you know, because you'll end up exhausted at the end of the day and not really fulfilled at all.
Exactly. And we'll touch on burnout a little bit later. I want to ask about that. So, okay. So in your TED Talk video, the one that's entitled Abracadabra, Realizing Your Dreams Now, you said everyone has a dream, but some can't identify with their dreams because they've given up on them. And you might think you lack the time, money, or resources to fulfill them. So we start settling on what's doable versus what we really want. So I want to know, Jocelyn, what do you think makes so many people give up on their dreams? And then how do you empower them to go back to making their dreams a reality?
Well, lots of things can have somebody stop acting on what they had as a vision or a dream. It could be somebody says something to them and then they go, oh, I guess I can't do that. That happened to me when I was five. My father said, oh, I asked him why he stopped painting, because he had stopped painting and he was in advertising. He goes, well, you can't do your art as your career. And in that moment, I said, oh, you can't do your art as your career. That's the truth. And then that was that. So I didn't even act on my dream because if it's not possible, why would I take actions towards it? So a lot of people, at some point in your life, something happens and you decide something isn't possible or something isn't practical or something isn't responsible. I've got to pay the rent. So when you make those decisions, they become reality. Right. Versus decisions. And if you can actually see them, which is what happened for me, which is why I, you know, began this whole mission so many years ago, when you can see something that you've been operating as if it's real as a decision, a real decision, but it doesn't mean it's real, like right. this lipstick or something, you know, it's not mm-hmm. physical. So when you can see the unreality of something, space opens. And you are free to look again at your vision. And that's a lot of the work that I do in the beginning with people is getting them looking at what is their vision? What do they really want? Most people don't even ask themselves that. They're just like, you know, what do you mean? What do I want? I've got to deal with what I've got, make sure this works. And so looking up and out is a very weak muscle for people.
Definitely. And what you mentioned before about the parents, you see your parents as like the arbiter of like truth, what they say.
Oh, totally.
Like they're bigger than you. They're older than you. They've been here. So, you know, if they tell you, hey, this is not a good idea, you shouldn't go towards this. A lot of times, you know, we want their acceptance. So we have to agree with them. But I guess it's for us as we get older to be like, listen, that's not a universal law that, you know, you can't make art a career or whatever it may be.
Whatever it is, but it isn't even that they said it. It's that I said it, because it's never what people say to you. It's what you say about what they say. Because, you know, my father told me lots of things in my life that I didn't listen to. So, you know, it's like that one I told myself. Okay, that's the truth. So now that's the lid. Whatever is the truth is the lid.
I like that. That's helpful.
I'm sure that'll be a newsletter at some point for me.
Nice. So yeah, as far as dreams go, like a lot of us seem to put our dreams in this far away, distant future. Why is it so important to get rid of that thinking and start the life of your dreams now versus someday?
Well, I mean, a couple of angles on that. So one thing is there is no someday. It's not a real day. If you look in your calendar, you won't find it. You've never reached it. It's not real. So there's only ever really now in reality. And, you know, there isn't really even a past in reality. There's only when we talk about the past, when, now. Mm-hmm. And the future is sort of a concept, and it's only real when we're talking about it now. So the only real time is now. So if you're not living a life of your dreams now, it's not real.
Right.
So what I work with people on is, and then to take that to a different space, is what do they really want? Okay, it's not about accomplish your goals now. That's different, because, you know, you're not going to triple your income now. You know, I mean, it might take 3 months or a year or whatever, but that's different. Goals are different than what I've labeled as your dream source, which is why you want the things you want. Why do you want to triple your income? What is the point? What do you think is going to be available after you do that isn't available now? And I work with people to get far enough out, like, you know, when I've worked with actors to look at their goals, when get an Academy Award. Okay, but then what? You know, well, then I'll be able to work with kids in Africa. Okay, well, then what? You know, and just take them further and further until they get to the real essence of what they really want, which is more of a space than a goal. It's like, you know, impact or self-expression or freedom or whatever that space is. And that is available right now. You can bring self-expression to any interaction, whether you're at Starbucks or you're on the stage or you're in a business meeting. You can bring that to life now. So that's the opportunity to live the life of your dreams now, not someday. You can reach your goals by X date, which is not someday because that's not a real day, but you could, you know, reach your goal by the end of the year, but you can live the life of your dreams now if you're bringing that space to life.
Yeah, I love that. That's so empowering because you don't have to wait. And if you're not feeling good in your life right now, you have the power to start living the way you want to right now. Yeah, that's.
I got that from my grandfather. When my grandfather was 95, he passed away when he was 95, and he was very sick. And I went down to Florida to see him, and I was holding his hand, and he looked at me, and he was like, "Are you happy?" And I said, "Yeah, I am happy." He goes, "Good. If you're not, change your mind." And that was pretty much it. I was like, "That is words of wisdom from our seniors," you know.
Oh wow, I love that. Yeah. Wise man, for sure.
Yes.
So I already know the answer because you talked about your upbringing, but where did you get the courage personally to follow your own dreams? I want to know, like, were your parents encouraging? Did you have mentors or teachers along the way? Or
my parents were always encouraging. It's just me that was saying it wasn't possible. Right. They wanted me to pursue my dream of being a singer my whole life. And I just kept arguing, you know, we fight against our dreams sometimes.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Right. I guess. Yeah. Because sometimes people think, oh, my parents were not encouraging. So it feels like I'm at a disadvantage or it's not my nature to be an entrepreneur. But really, there's no excuse. It's a decision you have to make for yourself. Right.
Yeah. And you'll only do whatever you do if it occurs as possible. If something doesn't occur as possible, you're not going, if it doesn't occur as possible to lose weight, you're not going to go on a diet. If it doesn't occur as possible to get in shape, you're not going to go to the gym. It really is, does something show up for you as doable?
Right.
And if it does, you act on it. And that's the real thing that I work with people on, is how do things show up for them? Because if their wife, you know, annoyed by their wife and their wife shows up as annoying, I don't care what she says or does, it's going to show up inside of that lens. So it really is, it's a designing of how things show up for you. And when you have limiting beliefs that get dismantled and disappeared, all of a sudden things show up for you differently.
Right. That makes sense. So if you think that something's doable, like, I think I could do that, but there's a big fear still with it, just because it's out of your comfort zone, you've never done
it.
Just because you have that big fear doesn't mean you should shy away from it, right?
If you if it seems doable, even if it doesn't seem doable, then you've got to talk to somebody who's done it and find out, you know, is this doable? How did you do? I mean, you know, you can't work things out in your own thinking. It's like, you know, your problems can't be solved at the level of thinking that created them, I think Einstein said at some point.
Right.
So you got to get outside of yourself, which is what the value of coaching is. I mean, I have coaches because I think that coaching is one of the most valuable vehicles to be able to see things you can't see so that you can do things that will forward your vision.
Right. My mind went to being, I'm more of a dismissive avoidant, and dismissive avoidants are like hyper independent and think they have to do everything on their own. But really, you need other people and people who have done things before you to give you good advice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it can be a little vulnerable for some people to ask for help, but it's so necessary. And I think any successful person got help and coaching.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. So you've accomplished so many things in your lifetime. You're in a band, actress. You've done a lot of different things. As a mom, career woman, and community leader, how have you found it's possible to do all these things and then, quote unquote, have it all?
Well, they're two separate things. Most people don't have it all because they think having it all means doing it all. So it loops back to something you said just a few minutes ago about people aren't great about asking for support. So it is not possible to do it all, but it is possible to have it all if you can make requests and surround yourself with teams of people that are powerful and effective. So, you know, I had teams of people that supported me in doing everything I've ever done in my life, which is a lot. And I do, you know, have a huge capacity to get things done because I also have a huge capacity to make requests of people to take action. And I also don't spend a lot of time thinking about what should I do. I take imperfect action, and imperfect action produces results. You know, thinking produces thoughts.
Yeah.
Action produces results. So if you're going to wait till you have it perfect and this and that, good luck. May the force be with you. It just doesn't work. Right. You know, at least I've found that it's more effective to just take action. I mean, I remember I was doing fundraising for my kids' school, and it was like the auction for this, you know, whatever. And up until that point, they had made $30,000 a year, you know, which is a lot, you know, for a public school auction, elementary school auction. And I came in and took over the auction, and I just started asking people for stuff. And I had like hundreds of Ida, and they just couldn't understand what I was doing to get the stuff. I was like, oh, it's called asking people. I'm just asking any place I go into, will you give a gift certificate for dinner? And we raised over $100,000 that first year that I took over the auction, because I just ask people. And I would have meetings, and they'd be like, well, I don't know if we should ask about this or about that. Like, what is going to hurt if you just ask them? They might say no, they might say yes, whatever. But you know, what are you going to wait for until you figure out the perfect way to ask for something? It's insane. Right.
So what is it? Do you think it's the rejection fear? Or people think they're going to get a really harsh no, or they don't want to bother people?
I honestly think that people are weird when it comes to requesting. Even when people say yes, people get weird. They're like, are you sure? You know, it's kind of late. Might be too much for you to contribute. I mean, they're so odd about it because they make it mean something.
Yeah.
They make it mean something about them. Oh, if they say no, they don't like me, or, you know, they're rejecting me. No, they're not. They're just saying no to a request. It really has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. It, in fact, only has to do with how that request shows up for them, because people's actions are in a dance with how things show up for them. So if the request shows up as an opportunity for them, they'll say yes. If it doesn't, they'll say no. That's simple. So it's, you don't have to worry about what it means about you. You know, people, you know, feel like there's so many things that people have going on about making requests. Oh, there's only so many requests you can make. It's, who said that?
Yeah.
I make requests all the time of people.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no, or sometimes they'll say, well, I'd like to, but whatever. And then I just get in the sandbox with them and say, okay, well, how could we make it work?
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
I love that.
just I don't have any attachment to it. I'm committed, but I'm not attached.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. We got to get out there and ask people. That's it.
Make 5 bold requests a day. I give this as an assignment to people often. Make 5 bold requests a day that has to do with fulfilling your dream.
Oh, wow. Wow. I could see things moving forward really quickly.
It's like this, because people are not even sharing their dream, never mind making requests about them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, guys, that's your homework. I love it. Okay. So for the mothers out there, you're a mother, 3 kids, is it, Jocelyn?
Yeah, I have 3 kids.
Yeah. So what's the secret for women to have both families and careers without sacrificing either?
Well, it has to do with context. You know, the context is decisive. And if you have things siloed, like here's my work and here's my family and here's my well-being, then you end up exhausted, burnt out, and also torn in many different directions. So when you create one overarching context for your life, then everything shows up as an expression of that. So for me, way back when, the context that I created was having dreams fulfilled. Mm-hmm. So that's everything for me. So my company is inside of that intention. My conversations with my kids are about their dreams being fulfilled. My parents, work with nonprofit. It's all about fulfilling people's vision or dreams. So that's where I listen from. That's where I act from. So nothing seems as separate. You know, if it's all one thing, then it's all one thing. So you don't have to schedule out, this is my work time and this is my, you know, I can schedule a call with my parents during the workday because it's my schedule. You know, it's like, and I don't have to wait till I'm done with this to do that.
Jeez, you're so empowering. No wonder.
Great. Thanks. That's my intention. There you go.
That's what you do. No, I love it. Thank you for sharing. So I want to explore the career area of life a little bit more. And we touched on this topic before of burnout. For anyone who's listening who feel like they might be burnout or on the brink of burnout, what are some good indicators that you might be burnt out or getting to that point? And B, what would you say the best thing for someone to do for themselves if they're finding themselves burnt out in this moment?
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest sources of burnout is being disconnected from your vision, which is so easy to become disconnected from your vision because you're looking down and managing and surviving. And, you know, the vision's like in the rearview mirror somewhere. So, I mean, symptoms of burnout are you're tired is one thing, or you start, you know, cutting corners at work or lying. Or, you know, showing up late. I mean, these days everybody's on Zoom. So showing up late is kind of like, really, where were you? You know, but in any case, those are sort of like telltale signs that you're suffering from burnout or about to. But the cure for it is to get connected to your vision. I was working with this guy who was selling juice. That was his job. He sold juice and he was burnt out, you know, totally ready to quit. And I said to him, okay, well, why did you take the job in the first place? What was your vision when you originally took the job? And he said, well, and he tried to think, he couldn't remember. And he goes, it was to do make a difference with people's well-being. That was my vision, was to impact people's well-being. And I said, okay, well, you stopped playing that game and you started selling juice. And he just, everything just kind of shifted and he went back to work. Number one, he loved his job again because he saw every juice he sold as a pathway to impacting people's well-being. So he was no longer having conversations hawking juice. He was empowering people to improve their well-being. Wow. And that was the vision inside of which he was acting. So the lens shifted. And when the lens or the context shifts, everything shifts.
Wow. So yeah, if you're staying on purpose and kind of checking in and making sure that you're doing something in alignment with your dreams and what you want to do, then
And keeping those dreams alive and real, even write them down, whatever, because people forget what inspires them. So put it on a post-it. Oh, making dreams come true. That's right. Because when in the heat of the moment, when you're getting pissed off at someone because they're doing blah, 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 that's not going to be there. You know, that vision is not going to be. So you have to put it there intentionally. What will be there by default, because it's just how culture is annoyance and irritation and exhaustion and reaction. And all of that stuff has a lot more mass to it than your vision. Your vision is like, it's like fragile. So you have to build mass around it.
Yeah, I like that. And keeping it at the forefront. Otherwise, you can kind of get lost in life and
totally
kind of forget about it. That's great advice. Okay. And then again, with career area, people are always saying, oh, you need to have good work-life balance. And obviously that sounds really nice, but for people who are really having a hard time achieving good work-life balance, what is a tip or advice you can give on?
Well, first of all, I'd say work-life balance is unachievable. It's not a real thing. And if you even just listen to the words work-life balance, so now you have two things and they're teetering. And have you ever balanced anything? I mean, it's like, it never really balanced. It's like, it goes like this, it goes like this. And that's how work life goes. When you're talking about work life balance, it's not a real thing. So if you create, and since when is work not part of your life? It doesn't even make any sense. You know, so if you create your life and your work is part of it and your family is part of it and your well-being is part of it, and then you design that life, you don't have to have work life balance.
Wow.
Because you have a life that you love.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, work and life are the same. They're not like
completely... It literally makes no sense. It's
Okay, we got to eliminate that term.
Yeah, exactly. Well, those words create a reality, and it creates a stressful reality because try and balance anything.
I think it was Eckhart Tolle that said, he used the analogy of the spinning plates. Once you get the house and then the relationship you want and the career you want, there might be a brief moment in time where you get all the seven spinning plates going, but inevitably one's going to fall, then another one's
going
to fall. Like, there's almost, it's, you're just going to create suffering because you're never going to have that balance like 24/7, 365. So yeah, that's really interesting. So in your 30 years of coaching experience, what would you say is like the number one roadblock that people have between achieving their goals and fulfilling their dreams, basically?
It is not being in action. So when people are stopped with action, and most people don't even know what an action is. I know that sounds stupid, but I'm telling you, I was just on the phone with a client who, you know, her business, she wants to go to the next level, whatever. I said, okay, so what's the first action that you have to take in that area? And she said, well, I need to optimize the market. I was like, that's a result. That's not an action. So what actions are going to contribute to optimizing the marketplace? I mean, it's literally, people are stopped because they're not clear what the actions are.
Right.
So clarifying the vision, clarifying the actions that will produce that result, and also creating measures. Most people don't like measures because it represents win or lose or something. I don't know. Reality, basically. And if you don't clarify the measures, then you're in a swirl about how you're doing. So if you want to have a happy marriage, but you don't have measures for that, what does that look like, a happy marriage? Does it mean we have X amount of fights a year? Does it mean that we, you know, see each other this many days a month? I mean, what does it mean to have a happy marriage? And until you have measures, you can't impact anything. It's just like your well-being. It's like, well, I want to be healthier. Okay, what does that mean? Is it lowering your blood pressure to this amount? Or is it, you know, reducing your heart rate? Or is it, you know, body mass, whatever those things are? You know, you have to have measures. Yeah. And any game, any real game, has measures. And you move what you measure.
Sure. I was just thinking about happiness. Everyone's like, oh, I want to be happy. And then you're like, well, what makes you happy? And they're like, I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, you need
some parameters. And if you want to be happy, you can take drugs. That makes people happy. It's really, what are you talking about? And what are you measuring? In my marriage, I've been married almost 30 years. We've had 5 fights in 30 years. That's a measure I use to determine that my marriage is working. You know, you have things that we've put into our marriage. We don't leave the house without kissing each other goodbye, or we don't go to sleep angry, or whatever all those things are. If you don't create those kind of measures, they're not going to be there by default. All you have by default is your feelings and thoughts. And that's a messy place to be measuring stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. So is that something like early on in the relationship, you sort of set these things, or along the way, you're like, okay, let's build in these things that I know will be helpful to keep us.
Well, it's more like it showed up inside of what we were up to in our marriage. You know, we're up to a bigger game than being right. And most people have fights because they're trying to be right over the other person. Sure. And we just weren't interested in that. You know, we were interested in having, you know, a powerful family. Mm-hmm. You know, so our context was bigger than just me or him. It was more holistic. And that's the same thing with the whole work-life balance thing. If you have a holistic context, your life, and then everything inside of it shows up. It's like my parents. My parents are 90 and 92, and we help take care of them. That's part of our world. It's not like these extra things that we have to do. No, it's like, this is our life, and that is part of it, just like our children are.
Right. Wow. Okay. So we love to ask people what they're doing on a daily basis to keep themselves in a good place, grounded, in a good place mentally. Are there any routines, rituals, or sort of daily things that you do to keep yourself in a good place?
Well, now that I've been living part-time in Paris, which was a dream of mine that I had, you know, a someday dream that I turned into a real thing, I've been able to have the mornings, which has been great. You know, instead of being in New York, because nobody wakes up till 2 o'clock, I have all day till 2 o'clock to have my own routine, go to hot yoga, take walks with my husband, go have coffee, do our shopping at the market. I mean, it's lovely. So it really supports my well-being, you know, it really has been incredibly nurturing. And we're just going back to New York shortly. So I'm looking at how I need to design my schedule there to support the same kind of space of well-being that has been available here.
Right.
And that's going to have to be designed, because by default, I'm going to wake up and get on the phone.
That's wonderful. So just wanted to know, what's next for Jocelyn? What are you focusing on these days? Any dreams that you're looking to still achieve?
Well, I'm shifting a lot of my, I have one-on-one clients, I have group coaching clients, and then I'm starting in 2024 an entrepreneur mastermind. So I'm very excited about that, because I'm going to work with entrepreneurs for a year and really intensively elevate their performance and their experience of freedom, which is a lot what a lot of the entrepreneurs that I work with experience, not being free, because they have to do it all and they have to be the one and all that. So I'm really focusing on designing that. And I'm also, you know, have a foundational program called Creating the Foundation for Being Unmessable With. And I'm in the design process for the second part of that curriculum. So like the advanced version of, once you have a foundation for being unmessable with, then what? So I'm in design. I'm designing a lot of content right now, which is one of my favorite things to do.
Oh, wonderful. Excellent. Okay. So we're coming to the end of the interview. Thank you again so much for being here. before we go, is there anything else you want to share with our audience that maybe we didn't cover or you wanted to mention?
Well, I'd love to give them a gift because, you know, on my website, I have all sorts of offers, different prices and free. And the gift that I have for people, you can get at giftfromjoss.com. And it's a 5-day game to start exercising the muscle of creation through using your promises to create what you want in your life. So it's fun, people love it, and it really gives you a sense of what it's like to be a creator versus a reactor.
Oh, wow, that sounds really beneficial. Thank you, appreciate that. And I'm sure
absolutely.
And then last but not least, how can people get in touch with you or follow you on social media?
On Instagram, I'm Be Unmessable With, and I think I'm the same on everything else, but, you know, I'm pretty findable. And my website is theartofbeingunmessablewith.com. And you can just go to giftfromjoss.com and get that gift, and then you'll be accessing everything. It's all up there.
Perfect. Jocelyn, thank you so much for your time. I learned so much. It's really unbelievable sort of what you've accomplished in the last, you know, however many years, but
56 years.
56 years, yeah. But that's great. And thanks for stopping by. And I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And for our listeners, good luck on your healing journey. And we'll see you next time.